What does it mean to be a Western yogi? How can someone who was born and raised in the West, who comes from a Judeo-Christian background, practice yoga and meditation in an authentic and genuine way? My name is Christopher Sartain, and this is the Western Yoga Podcast. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Western Yoga Podcast. It is June 20th, 2023, and it's a cloudy day here at our retreat center in southern Chile. I'm dog sitting for my nephew's, He has a 4-month-old puppy, and so if you hear some racket in the background, that's what's going on. And I have to kind of keep a close eye on him. And so that's the situation. That's the situation we find ourselves in today. And I'm currently finishing up a breathwork course that I've been offering for the last 3 months. And looking forward to starting another one here soon. We'll be traveling to Viña del Mar, which is a wonderful city on the coast of Chile, the central coast. So we'll be traveling there in a few weeks, and I'll be doing an in-person breathwork training. So I'm looking forward to that. And also this coming weekend, this Saturday and Sunday, I'll be presenting and guiding a meditation at Ryan Kurzak's online retreat that he's offering. So that's always a great honor to be able to work with him and support his work. We'll continue with our study of the Gospel of Thomas. Please go back and listen to the previous episodes regarding the Gospel of Thomas so that you can understand the context of the Gospel of Thomas, the history of the Gospel of Thomas, and why I am convinced, especially having read the scholarship of academics like John Kloppenborg and Helmut Kester and Elaine Pagels and others, I'm convinced, I'd say 99%, that the Gospel of Thomas is in fact the oldest of the Gospels, and that it is in fact the original teachings of Jesus, especially the mystical or esoteric or enlightenment teachings of Jesus. And we find some of these teachings also in the four so-called canonical Gospels, but not all of it. And what we find in the Gospels are Jesus's what we'd call the quantity teachings. So the teachings for the masses. And what we find in the Gospel of Thomas are the quality teachings, the teachings that he only taught his closest disciples. And it's mysticism. It's absolutely mysticism. And Jesus was an enlightened master. And so the teachings that we find in the Gospel of Thomas are enlightenment teachings. At any rate, I ask humbly that you please go back and listen to previous episodes in this series regarding the Gospel of Thomas so that you can understand the history and the context of the Gospel of Thomas and the so-called Dead Sea Scrolls, the Nag Hammadi texts. Gospel of Thomas was a Nag Hammadi text, but also it's important to understand the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Essenes if you really want to understand the Gospel of Thomas, because that's the tradition that Jesus came out of, the Essene tradition around Qumran and the Dead Sea. And so it's important to study the Dead Sea Scrolls so that we can understand the sort of philosophical orientation of Jesus and what he taught his closest disciples in the Gospel of Thomas. So let's read verse 56. Jesus said, "Whoever has come to understand the world has found only a corpse, and whoever has found a corpse is superior to the world." As with every verse in the Gospel of Thomas, there's a lot to unpack here. When we read the Gospel of Thomas, it's important to study the Gospel of Thomas with someone who's capable of unpacking the meaning of each verse. I don't know that I'm qualified to do so. I've certainly tried my best up to this point in the previous episodes, and I will certainly try my best today. But it's not good to study the Gospel of Thomas, for example, with a Christian apologist who reads it from a very literal perspective and is always trying to debunk the Gospel of Thomas. This is not the correct way to study the Gospel of Thomas. You want to study the Gospel of Thomas with someone who comes from an Enlightenment tradition, as I do, and who understands the deeper, more profound meanings of each verse. So Jesus says, "Whoever has come to understand the world has found only a corpse." So in other words, this isn't real. It's not alive. It's not vital. It isn't alive. It's empty. It's hollow. Vapid. Fleeting. Impermanent. Changing. It has no fixed reality. And if we contemplate our own physical body, of course, we're essentially just a walking corpse. We will, at some point, die. As someone on the spiritual path, as a spiritual seeker, I highly recommend to contemplate your death on a daily basis. And you say, you might think, "Wow, Chris, that sounds really morbid." Well, only if we're identified with the body. If you're identified with the body, then yes, of course, contemplating the death of the body sounds rather morbid. However, if you are no longer identified with the body, contemplating death can be a very useful activity. It can be a very useful practice for you. And so with that, I would like to read a verse from my spiritual teacher, Roy Eugene Davis. It's interesting, the power of synchronicity, and also how I'm able to continue communing with my spiritual teacher, even though he passed away several years ago. Typically, how I communicate with him is via his writings, via his books. So typically, I will have some quandary or question or something that I'm contemplating or some problem in my life, or I'll be searching for answers, and typically, I'll go sit by the creek here. I have a nice lounge chair there. I like to sit in and read. So I'll go out there with one of Roy's books. And typically, I like to just open up to a random page and read whatever the first thing I see. I typically just read it immediately. And 9 times out of 10, it's exactly what I need to read at that particular moment in my life. And a couple of days ago, I was a bit frustrated about how our society is set up and everything. And I was thinking about how I don't have a 401k like some of my friends have, or a pension plan that I can rely on when I'm retired and what have you. And I think about that quite often. I'm 43 years old, about to turn 44 here in a couple months. And well, and in midlife, you begin to contemplate your retirement and how you're going to take care of yourself when you're in your 70s and 80s and things like that. And my wife and I don't have any kind of retirement plan. We're yoga teachers and meditation teachers and whatnot. We have a small retreat center here, but we don't work for a company or anything like that. And we don't, you know, generate a lot of income. And so we don't really have a plan for retirement. So I was worried about that. I worry about it from time to time. And so at any rate, I was thinking about that, and I decided to go outside and read. And lo and behold, this is exactly what I opened to. And this is, by the way, The Book of Life by Roy Eugene Davis. It was originally published in 1993. I really love Roy's books from the 90s. That's my favorite era of Roy's writings. I'm not sure why, but well, let's say from like 85 to 2005. Those are my favorite books of his to read. At any rate, so I was thinking about all that, and I opened to this passage. Plan for eternity. Your relatively brief sojourn on Earth is but a parenthetical interlude in a much longer soul journey through space-time. Be realistic about fulfilling your worthy desires and major purposes in this life cycle, while knowing that you are not confined to it. Physical birthing and deathing are only incidents of temporary matter identification and release, not the beginnings and endings of you. People with little or no awakened spiritual consciousness tend to cope with circumstances and perhaps plan for reasonably secure older age and death, or submerge their awareness in sensory enjoyments, frantically grasping at fleeting promises of superficial, uncertain human happiness. This is not for you if you are intent upon self-discovery leading to completely conscious, functional freedom. Oh, man. So good. And so I was contemplating older age, retirement, pension, and all this nonsense. And then I opened to this passage. Plan for eternity were the first three words. The first three words I read. And so he still talks to me. Now, occasionally I do have some dreams with Roy, and they seem like astral experiences to me. I don't talk about it very often. But they're incredibly real and lucid and vivid, and he continues to teach me in the astral realms. But this in particular, this way in particular is how I typically communicate with him to this day. And so I'll have a question, I'll have a quandary or a problem. And so I'll go sit down. Usually I do a little bit of pranayama to calm my mind first, and my body and my energy. And then I just open to a page and start reading. And like I said, 9 times out of 10, it's exactly what I need to read in that particular moment. It's uncanny. It's just unbelievable. I'm just so blessed. Just can't believe it. Even after, you know, his passing, I'm still able to commune with him on the astral planes and still able to communicate him through his writings that he left us. So how many of us plan for eternity? There I was trying to plan for the next, you know, 30, 40 years or whatever God graces me with on this planet. This 30 years is nothing. You're an infinite being. You were never born and you will never die. You will live forever. You're living forever right now. This is one of the mistakes that we make in Western spirituality, Western religions. You don't have to wait until your physical body dies to experience eternal life. You're experiencing eternal life right now. As you listen to me talk, you're experiencing eternal life. that will always be true. So, of course, we don't need to wait for the physical body to die in order to experience eternal life. You're living eternally right now. It's happening. And so, I'm going to live forever. Chris, of course, this actor, will die, and that's fine. But I will live forever. So I need to plan for eternity, not for the next 30 years. 30 years is small potatoes in the spiritual sojourn through space-time. I need to be planning for eternity. For infinity. Not just for a few Earth years. And worrying and stressing out about my old age. So many of us do that. I know many people that are so afraid of getting old and dying that their entire life is based around having a job they hate so that they can save money, have a retirement plan. And even I've talked to some people and they don't seem very happy with their children and with their family life and whatnot. Some of them have left their wives and children and live alone and just see their kids, you know, once a week or maybe once a month. And so when I've talked to them and I've asked them, well, why did you have kids in the first place? And they tell me, well, I don't want to die alone. I don't want to die alone. It's a fascinating concept and something that we ought to contemplate. And by the way, if you have kids or you are planning on having kids, that can be a wonderful experience for you. So I'm not trying to dissuade anyone from having children. But I don't think that you should have children just so that you feel a sense of security and safety as you age. So that you have someone that will take care of you when you age. For example, in my family, I have two cousins that died in their 30s. Tragically. They're not going to be taking care of their parents. There are no guarantees in life. So please, don't have children with that intention. It's a very tamasic, selfish motivation and intention. So there's a lot of people that are just so afraid and worried and terrified about getting older and dying. But that's because they're completely identified with matter. They're identified with the body. They're identified with the corpse, to use Jesus' words. Instead of experiencing themselves as spirit, as pure, infinite, loving consciousness that lives forever and never dies. This is the great illusion. This is why we suffer. This is why we live in ignorance, because we are matter identified. We are identified with a corpse, essentially. And we live in an illusion, in the matrix, in Maya. And so Maya is very enticing and alluring. And so it's hard to break our identification with it. It seems quite real. And yet, as Jesus says in this verse, and whoever has found a corpse is superior to the world. In other words, once you realize that you're not this body, you are superior to it. In other words, you can live in the world, but not be of it. Yeah, I live in the world, but I am not of the world. I'm superior to this world, to this particular planet, to this particular body, this particular time. It's just an experience. It's a school. We're here to learn and grow and evolve, eventually wake up and graduate to other planes of existential reality. But it's a temporary situation. So your body, of course, is a rental unit. It's like an apartment that you rent for a few years. But it's not what you are. You see. Verse 58, Jesus said, "Blessed is the man who has suffered and found life." Blessed is the man who has suffered. Huh. And the talk that I'll be giving this Saturday in Ryan Kurzak's online retreat, I'll be discussing this very topic, although from a different perspective. Blessed is the man who has suffered. In many of the Eastern traditions, especially Buddhism, the teaching is that we come here to escape suffering, and that the goal of life is to experience nirvana, which is a perfect peace, a perfect and lasting peace. A state in which we no longer suffer. I'm going to make a bold take here, but I think the Buddha was dead wrong. And I wrote about this in my first book, The Sacred Science of Yoga and the Five Koshas. Oh, 12 years ago, I wrote that book. So I'm certainly not saying this for the first time, but and I've studied Buddhism in depth, but by the way, I studied it at the university level with some really excellent professors, and I was an Eastern religions major for a few years until I changed my major to something else, but that's neither here nor there. And I've read many Buddhist texts, and I have a lot of respect for Buddhists and Buddhism, especially Tibetan Buddhism, which has more in common with the yoga tradition than it does original Buddhism, by the way. At any rate, I don't think that we came to this particular planet during this particular time to escape suffering. The evidence is all around us. If that were the case, what a bizarre place to incarnate to escape suffering. There are refined astral realms and causal realms where there's far less suffering and it is far easier to experience lasting peace. That's not why you came here, you see. That's not why you incarnated into this particular Homo sapiens sapien form during this particular era. On this particular planet, you didn't come here to escape suffering. You came here to suffer. Now that might sound a bit radical to you if you're used to Buddhist teachings and the teachings about nirvana and whatnot. However, just based on the evidence that we have all around us, it's quite clear that we did not come here to experience permanent and lasting peace. We came here to suffer. Suffering isn't a bad thing, you see. Of course, once put through our mental filters, we label it as such, but if we just think about it objectively and neutrally, it's not bad. It's not something negative to be avoided or escaped. Now, I'm not telling you that you should embrace suffering either, or that you should attempt to attract suffering into your life. Of course not. Let's not go overboard here. But suffering is inevitable, especially in this body on this planet, and it's okay. It's okay to suffer. Now, of course, through our spiritual practices, meditation, yoga, pranayama, all these things, we can lessen our suffering and we can experience periods of periods where we suffer far less. And that's good. That's a good thing. However, if you are incarnated on this planet during this particular era, you will suffer. Now, some people suffer more than others. Some people are born into really terrible circumstances and impoverished countries and things like that. Some people are born into wealthy families where they don't suffer as much. Of course, they suffer in other ways. But you understand what I'm saying. But actually, we come here to suffer. That's how you learn. That's how you grow. That's how you evolve. Without suffering, there is no change. There is no growth. There is no evolution. Suffering is a prerequisite for evolution and change. There must be obstacles for evolution to occur. There must be challenges for evolution and growth to occur. There are certain species on this planet that have not changed for millions of years because their environment hasn't changed. They have not evolved at all. And so if evolution is to occur, there must be challenges. There must be a bit of suffering, obstacles to move around. Otherwise, there's no change, there's no evolution, there's no growth. And so every time we suffer, it's simply a lesson. It's a class. When viewed as such, suffering loses its negative connotation. It's just a lesson. It's just a class. That will, in the end, produce meaningful change, you see. And so I talk to people sometimes, they don't like to hear this teaching. They say, oh, well, no, suffering, we shouldn't suffer. You know, once we're enlightened, we no longer suffer and all these things. Well, I'm here to tell you, I've met some people that were fairly enlightened and yet they continued to suffer. Read Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda and tell me he didn't suffer. I knew my guru very well. He suffered. I'm sorry, but some people don't like to hear that. But yeah, he suffered a bit and went through some turmoil in his personal life and all these things. And he wasn't perfect, and that's okay. And I've met some other people that were fairly enlightened, or at least in my opinion they were, but they continue to suffer in small ways. And that's okay. We are incarnated in a school that specializes in resilience and perseverance. We are here to learn resilience and perseverance. There are other planets, other planes, other dimensions that specialize in other lessons or classes or fields of study, as it were. But on this particular planet, trapped inside this particular form during this particular era, I believe that the specialization here in this particular university or school is perseverance and resilience. And you learn how to just push through and get through to the other side. And a lot of that has to do with being able to tolerate suffering, not escape it. Tolerate it. Learn how to tolerate suffering. Learn how to see it from a different angle, a different perspective, so that it's not something negative. It's something useful and practical in your life, in your journey. So Jesus says, blessed is the man who has suffered and found life. Life here, in my estimation, means enlightenment or the divine. Blessed is the man who has suffered and found enlightenment through that suffering, you see. Not by escaping it, but by learning to tolerate it, push through it, persevere. That's what this life is all about. Verse 63. Jesus said, "There was a rich man who had much money. He said, 'I shall put my money to use so that I may sow, reap, plant, and fill my storehouse with produce, with the result that I shall lack nothing.' Such were his intentions. But that same night he died. Let him who has ears hear." So, in the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus sometimes says, or talks about having the eyes to see, the ears to hear. And that's how he differentiated the awake from the unawake. And that's how he differentiated his more enlightened disciples from the rest of his flock. And so, in other words, if you had the eyes to see and the ears to hear, you would understand his teachings. Otherwise, he just had to teach in a lot of parables and things like that for the public, for the masses. His quantity teachings, in other words. But his quality teachings were more mystical. Although, this is a bit of a parable teaching, isn't it? And this goes right into, it goes right back to this passage that I just read from Roy Eugene Davis's book, The Book of Life, where he says, "Plan for eternity." And he says, "People with little or no awakened spiritual consciousness tend to cope with circumstances and perhaps plan for reasonably secure older age and death, or submerge their awareness in sensory enjoyments, frantically grasping at fleeting promises of superficial, uncertain human happiness." Plan for eternity. Don't worry too much about the next 5 years of your life, 10 years of your life, 30, 40, 50 years of your life. You could die tomorrow. Jesus said, such were his intentions, but that same night he died. Don't worry too much about your mundane, worldly life plans. Plans change, y'all. You think I planned on being a meditation teacher living in Patagonia, Chile? You know, when I was younger? Certainly wasn't part of the plan, I'll tell you that. I wanted to be a rock star, you know. A musician. Plans change. Things change. Life changes. Things happen which are completely out of our control that change the course of our lives. So you may have great plans, great intentions, but things change. And you have to be able to adapt and persevere, be resilient, push through. No matter what. And so, plan for eternity. Plan for eternity. You're going to live forever. What are you doing today that will better prepare you for an eternal existence? Not for this mundane worldly life, but for your eternal life. What are you doing today that will help you better prepare for an eternal life? I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please share it with like-minded souls. Lots of love. Namaste.